Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello, my name's Nick.
Hello, I'm Woogie.
We are the Mouth of Manliness. This is a podcast all about mental health, but it's not just mental health. It's kind of about people's lives and about how they cope and how they manage in the world.
Yeah, and digging into the stories that make them who they are.
Yeah, so it's real life stories where we talk about things that people have been through and how they've managed and how they've coped and how they've come out the other side. So sometimes it's just me and Woogie here, but more often than not, we're talking to guests, sometimes more well-known guests, but more often than anything, it's just normal people who have been through interesting situations.
Yeah, and they've all got a lovely story to tell.
Yeah, so Mouth of Manliness, we are about mental health, but we're more about people and stories.
So, welcome to the Mouth.
The Mouth of Manliness. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. We are just coming out of lockdown. I feel like a news presenter. This is season three. And my guest today is Tom Davies from Properly Mental Podcast.
Oh, hello, mate.
So, some people might have known that I was a guest on Tom's podcast very recently and where I didn't really stop talking. So it's a chance to turn it around on Tom today. But welcome, Tom. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, mate, thanks for having me, man. It's nice to catch you again, man. It's cool.
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed last time. I thought, I was buzzed after that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, me too, man. And yeah, it was a great episode. It did really well. A lot of people have listened. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's wicked.
Lovely. That's what we like to hear. So how you been getting on?
Been all right, mate, to be honest. Yeah, I'm good. Just kind of... ticking over, I think, Nick, you know, just plodding along, doing my thing. But yeah, life's good at the moment. I was thinking about this today. I was having a chat with someone today and, you know, when like you have a bit of a good patch in life, just in general, right? And yeah. We don't really acknowledge that. We kind of go, oh yeah, life's good. And then we just skip past it and move on. And I was thinking today, do you know what, right? I feel really good. I'm having a good week and I'm going to celebrate that. And so today I've been like kind of skipping around a place and just enjoying myself and life's good, man. It's sweet. I'm patting myself on the back, making the most of it.
You know what, I just think that is so easily missed. Like, for starters, patting yourself on the back, like, just, you know, I'm doing all right, I'm doing well, and like acknowledging it to yourself somehow. And that's something that like we don't do enough.
No, not at all. Not at all. And if you're having a bad day, it's so easy to like, we do the opposite, right? We dwell in that space.
Yeah.
And you just sort of like almost punish yourself for having a bad day, like beat yourself up over it. It becomes another thing to make your day worse.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just trying to like just flip that, man. And just, just big myself up from time to time, you know, in a cheerleader stuff.
Yeah. And then if you're having a good day, try and really recognize it then, so that when you're having a shit day, you think, oh, well, that day was good. It's not all bad.
Yeah, that's it, man. Yeah, that whole hope thing, you know, it will pass. It will pass.
Yeah, and everything does pass.
Yeah, very much so, man. Yeah.
So tell us about your podcast. Let's start with tell me all about it.
Yeah, so it's called The Proper Mental Podcast.
Proper Mental. I keep calling it Proper Mental.
And that's kind of like, that's a quote really. So I went through some like mental health stuff myself, and for a long time I didn't know what was going on, and I thought I was going mad. And I said to someone, I said, oh, like I feel like I'm going proper mental. And that kind of later on when I was talking about it a lot more on a podcast and I needed a name, I was like, you know what, that's it, man, that's the one. So it kind of started, it initially started with me and my mate Chris, and during the one of the lockdowns, I lose track, they've all blended into one, but yeah, one of the lockdowns where you could meet up with someone and go for walks and stuff like that. And we just started, we were doing some work together, so we used to meet up and talk about some work that we were doing, and we just started going for these long walks and grabbing a takeout coffee and just having a chat. And we talk about mental health. He runs a charity, it's called Running Head First. They do amazing work. I've got to get that plug in. Yeah. So you know, he's been really open about things he's been through. And we just start talking about it, and we talk about other stuff, and we'd even have a bit of a laugh about it. And I'd come back from these walks and I was like, oh, this is really nice, man. It's nice just to kind of discuss it. It's not like therapy where you're digging into it and you can have a bit of a laugh about the absurdity of it, because some of like mental health stuff is just so absurd. Oh, yeah. You have to laugh, right?
Yeah.
And they're really good. So we thought, oh, this kind of, we weren't going to do a podcast. I said, let's just record a few things and just throw it up on YouTube and see what happens. And it was never supposed to be a podcast. I was always kind of thought like, well, does the world really need another couple of white blokes on a podcast, you know, like that stereotype? Yeah. But yeah, we did it. So yeah, we recorded a few and it was really good. And we said, oh, you know, people are actually listening. Let's see if we can get some guests on. And we started getting some guests on. And then unfortunately, because it's like picked up and it's got a bit of momentum to it. Unfortunately, Chris, because he had a charity and everything, he had to step away from it. So I kind of thought, you know what, I'm into this. I'm going to keep going. And I have done. And it, yeah, that's where it came from, mate. Yeah.
The same happened to me. I was doing it with Brad and then he left. But at that point I was, it was so much momentum was going on. It seemed bigger than me. And then also it was making me feel better. I was like, no, I've got to do it.
Yeah, definitely. I think like I found that, and I didn't realize till I started doing the podcast, but I'd kind of, and I think this is huge in men's mental health, as you get older and you journey through life, a lot of the things that are really good for mental health become less available to us. And for me, I had no creative outlet. And I'm self-employed, and I turned a lot of the things I enjoyed doing into my job. So they no longer became fun. And I didn't realize.
Really? What do you do?
I teach people how to move. I've got a bit of a weird job. So I call myself a movement coach, and I'm a yoga teacher, and I do various stuff in the movement space. So I help people to like move out of pain and improve their range of motion for the gym and stuff like that. Yeah. So I was kind of like really into yoga, really into movement, into anatomy and all this sort of stuff. And then I kind of made this job out of it. And then I'd spend all my time, my hobbies became my work, and I had nothing for this, my creativity. And I felt really, really stifled. And one thing podcasting has done for me, it's given me that back. I feel like when I was a kid and I used to want to be in a band and I was writing songs and stuff like that, it's the same sort of feeling for me to be just like hustling and trying to get older people and planning the artwork and messing about with stuff. And there's something really, that's been really good for me, really healing. You know? Yeah, it's wicked.
It's fun. Yeah, you're totally right. That's something that I really like about it. It gives you kind of reason to keep moving along, keep ticking along, because there's always like, you get a guest, really pleased about that. And you're right. It does keep you hustling. And if you sit still, and when you're depressed, you're doing the complete opposite. So it does kind of, you're getting a momentum, and then it kind of carries you along quite nicely, I think.
Definitely. I think as well, the whole thing with like mental health is that, you can sometimes, for me personally, I would work far too hard on trying to find a cure, trying to find a cause. Why am I going through this? I have to find the answer and unlock it, you know, and really like, and that would become a really negative thing for me. You know, I'd almost like do so much wellness stuff that it became almost harmful, you know, the so-called good things. And what I really like about podcasting as well is that it is what it is, and you have your conversation and you put it out there. There's this element of letting go. And I have so many chats that go where I don't expect, or I plan them to go something and that doesn't happen. And that's been really good for me, is getting me to just learn to just let go and just trust it, man. Put it out there and move on. And that's powerful, man. I've been applying that, trying to apply that to myself and how my head works and stuff, is just be okay with it. Just let stuff out, move on to the next thing, let it turn into what it turns into, you know?
Also kind of meet like-minded people like yourself. Like, you talk to other people, you've all been through something,
So there's this kind of a thread through it that's kind of like you've got something massive in common. And it just, yeah, you just end up just meeting loads of like-minded people and then like opportunities and that. It's great.
Yeah, you know, mental health struggles are lonely, right? And then when you can connect with people with that thread in common, you know, there's something really nice about that. There's something really, it makes you feel a lot. It sounds weird, man, but you almost feel part of a club, you know, like like a bit of a gang mentality in some ways. But yeah, it's dead nice, that, man. I really like that.
So tell me more about you then. So you were just, you just said about trying to understand the whys. And I think that's, I do think that's important, but I do think you're right. You can get really hung up on the whys, and actually you're still where you are. You don't really get an answer. And sometimes the whys are pretty painful. But yeah, there's still a bit of me. I'm still glad I did all the whys, you know, like the why do I behave that way, or why do I think that way? And then you understand it from your past and that kind of thing. So have you been through that kind of thing with yourself, you know, like almost kind of trying to make sense of why?
Yeah, yeah, very much. Spent a long time doing that, a long time in therapy. I was like, I'm still in therapy now. And to be honest, I think like whether I'm in a good place or a bad place, I think I always will. That's something for me that I've, yeah, it's really connected with me, and I quite enjoy it, if I'm being honest, in a weird way. You know, I quite like the sound of my own voice and getting to chat about me. Who doesn't, right? But it's yeah, so just through therapy and exploring stuff. But for a long time, I was looking for this why. I was looking for this reason. And I think a lot of that is like, you know, just in like, I know it sounds daft, but just in movies. And I really honestly thought I'd like think of some memory of something that happened and I'd make peace with it and everything would go away, you know? And but with me, there wasn't really a why. It was 100 and a million, like death by 1,000 paper cuts, you know, and these things that I didn't know were happening for a variety of reasons, because I'm really good at distracting myself and because modern society, you know, hides these things or whatever. And it just chipped away and chipped away and chipped away and chipped away until it broke, you know. But there wasn't a why. But man, I worked hard to find that why. Oh, so hard. I looked in all the wrong places. You name a rabbit hole, I've been down it, Nick, you know, like I was pretty damn close to like heading off to Peru to do a like an ayahuasca thing and all sorts of stuff, you know, like I really just searched under everywhere. And what I came out with was like, you know, for me personally, I didn't really need any of that, man. I had to find peace with myself, because wherever you are, you're still you, right? And you need to make peace. For me, once I made peace with myself, then I realized that all the external stuff didn't really fucking matter.
Oh, it's so true. It's a really basic thing. It's just down to how you look at everything. And if you kind of made a decision to try not to look that way and then put a lot of effort in, it works. It's funny though, because like, I'm at a point where I understand why I am, how I am. Like I can, you know, trace everything back and make sense of everything. But I still have days when I want to go to Peru and take ayahuasca. You know, I still have those days, because it's like, well, there's got to be an answer still, because there's still no answer.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I don't know, maybe the key, I don't know, is to, what I'm trying to do is to, I'm still happy to look for the answer, but I want to try and get more comfortable in the process. So if that answer doesn't materialize, I'm not going to hate myself for it. You know, like I'm going to be okay with the journey and keep doing the work, which ain't easy, because it's called the work for a reason, right? It's called the work because it sucks sometimes. But, you know, who likes work? But it's, being okay with maybe never finding that thing, unlocking that box, maybe.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think what you said, be okay with the journey, and that is really something that, you know, we can all benefit from hearing that. I think it's really, it's weird, because like I know that say with me, I tend to do black and white thinking, so it's either it's kind of all or nothing, or it's right or it's wrong, you know. So when I'm not feeling that well, I go into that thinking. And then when I'm working on it and I'm doing well, then I can kind of sit in that, well, no, it don't matter. Let's just enjoy where I am and like just try and be comfortable where I am.
Yeah.
It's so true. That's really hard to do.
It really is. And particularly when you're in like a bad patch, because then you can't trust your own brain, right? So it's like, yeah, you know what you should do, you know what you're supposed to do, doing it's another thing altogether. So it's really easy. Like I said, I'm having a great day. I can sit and say all this stuff today because it's a great day. Yeah, but you know, if the tide turns at some point, which, you know, we never know, then it becomes a lot more difficult to kind of do all the stuff that you know you should and that you know works and all that.
I usually find it kind of passes, and then that's when I'm like, right, I've got to, like, do the work, and I realise the things I haven't been doing, and, you know, like, process is the important thing. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? So so tell us about when did you said that kind of prior to this, you had like a really rough patch.
Yeah. In the last sort of like 4 or 5 years, really, I had one. If you go back probably about four, how was my son? Five. Go back 5 years.
Yeah.
When my son was born, that was like the catalyst for my first, what I call a breakdown, for want of a better expression, really.
Yeah.
And that, for a long time, I thought that it was like almost like a postnatal thing, you know, which I kind of think it was to some extent. But what I'm now realizing is that I'd been living my life in a certain way. I'd been doing a lot of things that weren't particularly good for me for a very, very long time. And these things were taking up so much space that the birth of a child, there was no space left. That was like that was the thing, you know, that was the leak in the basement. That was the thing that just blew the pipe off the wall and flooded everything. I kind of like went through that and went up and down with it. I wasn't employed at that time. I was working towards it, and I took some time off work, and I did a bit of counseling and, you know, all these sorts of stuff. And it got pretty dark, you know, there was lots of stuff going on. It got pretty heavy. And then I kind of moved through that, and I'd done a lot of counseling, and I was more open about talking about it. And I kind of thought I'd cracked it, you know, and I kind of thought, oh, that was it. It was just a blip. I still wasn't saying that I had depression. I still wasn't saying that I had anxiety. I still wasn't acknowledging really what had happened. And I coasted along for another couple of years after that, like up and down, and I'd have a bad week and a bad weekend and a bad month, and then it'd go away. And I was just determined. I was like, this ain't happening to me. Why not? Because I don't want it to, you know. And if I keep running fast enough, it can't catch me, that type of thing. At the back end of last year, October, November last year, I think it just got to the point when it just caught me up, and I had like another quite serious breakdown. And everyone was very worried, and that's what I've never done medication until then. That's the one thing I haven't tried. I've got an auntie who's a nurse, and she kind of said, look, come on, why don't you give it a go? And I did. And that was a bit of a turning point for me. And that kind of helped me pull all the other stuff I was doing together. I was doing lots of meditation, lots of yoga, lots of walking and breath work, and, you know, all these sorts of things, and it weren't working. And for me, that then became like a thing, you know. I was like, oh, this works for everyone else. Why doesn't it work for me? Oh, it's because I'm fucking shit. And you know, all the stuff you think, right? And because people would say, oh, I go to the gym, it's great for my mental health. And I was like, well, I've been to the gym 5 times this week and I still hate myself, you know. It became this whole thing. And it was meds that helped me turn the corner, you know. And I know that's not for everyone. I'd never promote it. But that was a bit of a turning point. So I've been rebuilding since then, really. But the rebuilding process has been quite swift, I will say that. And I think because of all the work I did in the build-up, that's all paying off now. All the other stuff is paying off. I kind of like banked those tools, and then once I made it over the crest of the hill, I was able to sort of draw some stuff out of the bank. That was weird.
When you said you were kind of verbalizing your brain, it's like, this works for everyone else, why don't it work for me? Oh mate, that rings with me. That really does. God. And that's it, your brain does that, doesn't it? It's like, everything is what it's like, you're so useless.
You can literally take any situation and just flip it around to somehow, like, you know, make yourself the bad guy, make yourself the bad person, it's horrible. You just internalize on yourself. It's like sort of bullying yourself. It's like living with the school bully, isn't it? All the time, because the bully's in your head. Yeah, it's intense, man.
It's amazing all the things you said are like, you know, exercise, meditation. Yeah, I'm not surprised you feel good now because you're doing everything.
Mate, I worked hard. Yeah,
no, that's really hard work.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. My missus, like, you know, because when you're poor, it really pushes your marriage, right? And we've had a really rough few years, and we, you know, I said to her, when I got in a better space, I said to my wife, I said, I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you put up with me. I was so selfish. Cause when you're ill, it is selfish. All that hating yourself is really selfish, actually, in a strange way, you know? And I said to her, like, you know, I don't know how you put up with it. I don't know how you stayed with me through that. And she said, because you kept trying stuff, because you didn't give up on yourself. You know, that was, she kept fighting. Cause I did. And that's what you're doing when you're trying all those things, right? When you're looking for answers, it's like it sounds dramatic, but it's not. You're fighting to stay alive, man. To unlock that thing. Yeah, definitely.
It's funny. My wife says the same kind of thing. She's like, sometimes she'll see me wallowing and she'll say, enough now. But she's kind of felt the same when she's seen me really bad and I've needed a lot of support and I've been a mess. Normally that I'm still trying, you know, I don't just give in anymore. I'll be like, right, fuck it, we'll book some hypnotherapy and we'll do that. Whilst you're making an effort, it's easier to live with it, isn't it? If you're the other person, at least they're trying, they're not just sitting in it. But that's the problem, isn't it? Like, you do sit in it from time to time.
Yeah. And you know, there is, if you can, one thing about doing the work I found is that if you get that level of self-awareness where you kind of know what you're doing. For a long time, I used to just get up in the morning and hope for the best. And I'd be halfway down the stairs and I'd think, oh, fuck, it's going to be a bad day. Whereas now I feel like I don't have control over I know exactly what's going to happen, but I've got a level of self-awareness. So even if I'm wallowing, I know I'm wallowing and I'll give myself permission to wallow. And I think that's almost what these slogans mean, you know, the whole it's okay to not be okay and stuff. Yeah. You know, it doesn't mean it's okay to be ill forever because there's help out there and you can get better. Yeah. But it does mean that it's okay to just kind of put your hand up and say, do you know what? Let's write today off. It's not going to be nice. I'm going to wallow. I'm going to give myself the time and space to wallow. And when I've got my energy up a little bit, then I'm going to start fighting back. But for now, what I need is a wallow. And there's something in that, right? It's important, I think.
I think you just gave some amazing advice and something like I totally agree with. Sometimes, like, you're just so exhausted with fighting that you just kind of have to give yourself a day off.
Yeah.
And like, sometimes I might have a day in bed and my wife's like, she would normally have seen it coming anyway, you know, just through my general demeanour and attitude. And then, I'll have a day off. And it's not saying, oh, I give in. It's just saying I'm fucking tired.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, sometimes when you're fighting, when you're pushing anything and you feel like the world's pushing back, then maybe you shouldn't be pushing for a little bit, you know? Yeah. Maybe you should just let's see how it plays out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I try not to push too much nowadays. I try and just go, just see what happens. Just go with whatever happens. It's all about the journey.
Yeah, that's it. That's so true. Yeah.
So true. So I'm interested because I'd really like to know some of the really cool things you've learned from like guests on the podcast.
Crikey, there's a lot, man. And it's really interesting when you speak, and you'll find this as well, when you speak to people and like someone will say something talking about their story and I'll go, well, you've just described a bit of me.
Yeah, well, like you did with me. Yeah, just then, you know, earlier. Like, it's totally right.
I said for a long, long time, I'd be like, I've, you know, suffered from depression and stuff like that. I never really understood what anxiety was. And when people talk about anxiety and depression going hand in hand and stuff like that, I'd be like, no, it was never really it's never been a thing for me. And then the more I've learned about anxiety, it's like, oh yeah, I kind of like, yeah that's something that. I've been dealing with for a long, long time.
I did exactly the same. I learned more about anxiety and I was like, oh, right. So I'm not having panic attacks, but I, you know, I'm riddled with anxiety.
Yeah.
ever written. Got to 43 like 2 years ago, and then learned about a bit more about anxiety. It's like, oh,
yeah, could have done with knowing this a little while ago.
The same things anyway, because anxiety is still pretty much your brain telling you like there's no way you can do that because you're shit.
Yeah, definitely. And like with anxiety, like whether it's with you're like worrying, overthinking, no matter how like it manifests in you, it's really, really energy intensive. Yeah. So one thing I have to do is really protect my energy. And anxiety empties the tank. And when the tank gets empty, then my head falls off. That's my process. Like, that's what I had to work out. I couldn't understand why I kept having these really dark, depressive episodes. And it was because I was running down my emotional energy by overthinking, by worrying, by, and like for me, it manifests in all sorts of weird ways, you know, like I can get something in my head and I won't be able to switch off. And like, until I've achieved that task, you know, if I'm,
yeah, I'll do that.
You know, like I will chase something down and I was speaking, but yeah, to take you back to your question. So I spoke to Kate Cross, who's an England cricket player who's been very, very open about her problems with depression and stuff. And she did this amazing post on Instagram about how, you know, you have to post about not feeling well outside of Mental Health Awareness Week. You know, like we don't just stop posting when the hashtag finishes. You know, we're up for posting all the time. And I thought it was brilliant. And she came on and she was talking about how her... how she, because she's a Northern girl and she could be quite like surly and stand backish and stuff like that, like around training. And they'd be, oh, it's just Kate. She's just a grumpy Northerner. And she like thought that was the case. And it was only when she did a lot of work and stuff that she found out that that was her way of like feeling anxious in public. And I was like, oh man, like that's me in a nutshell. You know, people kind of think that I'm sometimes a little bit cocky or a little bit arrogant because I can be quite standoffish in social situations. And I always thought it was just like, oh, I'm that guy who hangs at the back of the room and sees how the lay of the land works before before I show my personality. And in reality, it's not. It's like I'm anxious as hell and I don't know how to be myself or what to do around people. So I just close everything down and stand at the back and just look cool, you know? And it's just like really like weird things like that, that was a huge understanding for me. And now when I'm in those social situations and I feel really, really awkward, I know what's happening now. You know, I go, oh my God, this isn't a normal feeling. This isn't my personality. This is something that I've kind of like need to learn how to deal with.
You know, like you said earlier about films and I feel like I kind of threw my head into films from very young and like, everything's like a film to me in a weird way, and then and I would do exactly that, and I'd be like, well, no, that's all right, because the cool guys do that in films. And you think, and then you're just like, oh, why am I alone?
yeah, that's it. That was always me. Like, I don't drink, I'm teetotal now, but when I used to drink, I was always the guy that was like, you know, lent at the bar with a pint, scoping the place out, and, you know, far too cool to be doing all this sort of stuff, you know. And I wasn't cool at all. I was just fucking petrified of showing myself, of letting other people see my personality. I was scared of doing anything in case anyone, like, you know, mocked me or judged me or anything like that. So everyone would be like, oh, you're also cool, just like lurking in the background. So I'd be like, yeah, cool guy. But I wasn't. I was fucking petrified. Yeah, definitely.
Because
you'll
think no one will like you.
Yeah,
it's basically what it is. It's like ego. Your ego's going, no one likes you.
Yeah,
like, don't even fucking bother. Oh, look, they're having a right laugh. That's because you're not there, and all those
things
are going through your head.
Yeah, that's
like,
that
is true. I used to I still do it to some extent. Like drink loads, and then that kind of masks it. And then I end up going too far the other way, and I think I annoy people. Like, that happens to me. And it is, it's still basically what you said. It's like really basic thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting she said that. It's quite cool, you know, in a position like that, for a woman to come forward and be really that open.
So, she's incredible. There's been a few people, that I've chatted to, and you kind of think like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, maybe I need to go and read up on that. Maybe I need to go and investigate that a bit further. And one thing I love as well is that even if someone's situation or what they've been through is completely different to mine, even though I've not experienced it, I can understand it to a point, and I can be compassionate about it because I've been through my own version of it.
Yep.
And that's why I think there's power in conversation. That's where relatability comes from. We don't all have to have the same thing. We don't all have to have the same illness. We don't have to have the same, you know, amounts of fucking, you know, suicide attempts under our belts or whatever it is. No. But you can just be compassionate for someone because you know that they've been to somewhere awful and you've been to your own awful. And you know, you know, and you just feel bad for them and you just want to help them, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the kind of common thread going through like our podcast, really, because it's the common thread. It's that we've all experienced darkness. And yeah, how you get there, you know, intensity and all of that doesn't matter. You know, we've got this commonality there that's quite special. That means that when you talk to someone and they're like, oh, I do that too, gradually your own walls are chipping down because it's like, oh, it's not just me. Oh, it's like, oh, I'm not that bad. You know, like other people experience this. What my brain's telling me isn't necessarily true.
Yeah. The first time when you don't really know what's going on with yourself and life's really, really hard, the first time you realise that you're not a complete lunatic and there are other people that see the world the way you do or experience these things, it's really powerful. It's really, really powerful. Yeah. To go, oh my God, I might still be on my own, but I'm not on my own. If that makes any sort of sense, man.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Like, I guess, it's like that. You're still walking your journey and your journey invariably is going to be, wow, this is, I suppose this is what I quite often think is that I can get into this position where I'm like, why is my journey so much fucking harder than everyone else's? Like, I can get into that mindset. And that's why talking to other people like on here really helps, because then I realise that, no, actually, it's quite a lot of us dealing with this shit. My journey's not necessarily worse than someone else's. Like, I've always kind of worked in, like, kind of caring professions, and that's often helped me because I'm around people who have had really, really terrible life experiences, and that helps me put things into perspective. It's like, oh, actually, like, they're doing a mate, they're fucking coping a lot. Well, there can be times when I'm like, they're coping a lot better than me, why am I so shit? Or it's like, oh, they've been through a lot more than me, and they're doing well, so I can.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, right? Yeah, you can find inspiration in other people, can't you, as well, when they're like, they're getting by and you think, God, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. Yeah. But then at the same time, man, it's cool now and again to be pissed off with the world for stuff, because do you know what? Like, that's a valid emotion, right? Fucking feel it, man. Be pissed off for having a, you know, like, hell yeah. Like, it, suppressing all these things and pushing them down for years is half the fucking reason in the first place. You know, so if you're pissed off with the world, be pissed off with the world.
Yeah, repression.
Yeah.
A bit of Freud in there. Yeah, it's very true. Very true. Combinations. It sounds like you do a lot. What's your average day? You're working on it, it's different to my working on it.
Yeah. For a long time, I tried to do all the things all the time. And you see this a lot on, you know, these like social media gurus and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, get up at 4 in the morning for your tepid glass of lemon water and your broccoli smoothie and then your yoga and your breath work and all this sort of stuff. I did that for a while and it nearly broke me, man, getting up that fucking early all the time and like messing about with a blender. And it just weren't for me. So I kind of do a lot of the stuff some of the time. And that works for me. So, you know, I walk a lot. Walking's really good for me. I walk to work and I'll go out for a walk. No matter what the weather is, I'll go out and, you know, chase me 10,000 steps and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, really? See, I've never been able to bring myself to do all that stuff. And I don't know. I've been going through a bit of a dark period lately. And I keep coming back to that conclusion that I need to, like, my wife says it all the time, just do some exercise or do yoga. She does yoga. She's always trying to get me to do it with her. And I think, I've got shame about it. Like, I realise that I've got shame around any kind of exercise. So like, you know, rather than the just, I imagine a lot of people experience that. If you're like, you know, like if people are really overweight, going to the gym, actually going to the gym is amazing. Like not even doing anything, but going, because like they must feel huge shame. And yeah. I feel shame. Anytime I do any exercise, I become so self-conscious and so uncomfortable that I just don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's common, man. A lot of people like experience that, don't they? I always think a lot of it comes down to if you find the exercise that you want to do, because a lot, you know, a part of the problem is everyone goes, oh, I should do something. Don't know what to, I'll just go running. Well, running's not for everyone. You know, some.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's quite public as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's, I suppose it's finding what works. Yeah. But you know, yeah, I'm a big fan of walking, huge fan of walking. Yeah. I go to gym a lot. I do a lot of training and stuff like that. That's kind of like linked to my work as well, so yeah, I do that sort of stuff. I'm a meditator, but not, I'm trying to be one of those people that does 20 minutes every day, but I'm not. I usually, like, if I feel that life is starting to speed up, you know, if I kind of once, if my spider senses are tingling and thinking, oh right, this is how it feels, that's when meditation comes in for me. That's how I put the brakes on.
What meditation do you do?
There's a teacher called Tara Brack who has a podcast, and every week she does like a podcast, which I've never listened to. I'm sure it's really good, but she also does that, and then she does a 20-minute meditation where it's like half guided. So she'll do some scans and some breathing stuff, and then she'll leave you to it for a bit, and then she'll come back in and stuff like that. I tend to use that. Is my go-to. And she does puts one new one up every week, and they're really nice. Yeah, really, really nice.
How do you do it? How do you sit? Do you go in a quiet room?
I'm lucky to live near the coast, and I like to be outside. So if it's not like pouring down, I tend to go for a long walk. I have a lot of energy, and if I try and meditate just off the bat, I can't sit still, mate. I have to be moving. So I go for a long walk first, and I tire myself out. And then I'll go sit on a beach or sit in a field, something like that. And yeah, sit on a rock. And yeah,
just fucking hell, you do work sit. On it. That's like all my work. I always say I'm working on it, and I am, but it's all really internal. It's like proper internal working. It's like constantly checking your brain. Your brain says that, is that right? And it's all of that. It's very rarely kind of physical. And I'm very lazy. I feel I get ill all the time. And my wife's like, part of that is because you don't have any exercise and you avoid, and like I generally don't go outside except to walk the dog maybe for like yeah. half an hour. And yeah. that's it. Oh, whereabouts on the coast are you? I imagine the coast is nice.
I live on the Wirral, so like opposite Liverpool, so like northwest. It's where my wife's from. I'm from Wales originally, so that's kind of, yeah, West Wales is my home. But yeah, I live on the Wirral. Yeah, I moved here. And yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world. Quite lucky to have that nature hit on my doorstep. But yeah, getting outside is huge, man. Vitamin D and fresh air and all that sort of stuff. One, you know, again, talking about what I've learned from the podcast, one of my best takeaway quotes is mental health needs physical support. And, you know, that's like, that to me was like, yes, that kind of sums up the, you know, my particular way of looking after myself. Yeah, yeah. Mental health needs physical support.
I often go back to the one that action is the enemy of thought. And thought is always the problem. And if you're doing something, you're not thinking. And like, I always say that with a caveat of that, you know, sometimes you do need to think, you know, don't go and kill someone. But the idea that if you're doing something, you're just not thinking. Mm. And I think the other thing about like kind of going out and being around nature is that it kind of, yeah, it makes you present.
Yeah.
So it's, I think the one thing I'm really bad at and I'm always working on is just trying to be present. I'm always stressing about something or worrying about something or what could I be doing? And what I should be doing is just thinking, oh, the sun feels nice.
Yeah, and yeah.
I went on a holiday on the Norfolk Broads and I did it. And because you can't go fast, and you have to concentrate, because I was just doing all the riding the boat, that it was one of my best holidays ever, because I didn't think, I was just like, I was in the moment all the time.
Yeah.
It's really rare. I find that so difficult. I think all the things you say are all kind of geared to bring you in the moment a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of the definition of mindfulness, really, isn't it? It's just like, it's not to empty your head when you meditate. It's to find, just focus on one thing, slow it down, you know, focus, take your attention away from all these other things. We're all like, as modern human society is such a like impactful, man. It doesn't serve us. The world we live in does not serve us very well. And we're massively overstimulated. Even like a walk to the shop, you've got cars and signs and lights and people, and, you know, we're not necessarily designed for it. You look at driving, right? So the human brain is, I'm going into work mode here, mate, but the human brain is only designed to travel as fast as you can run. And then you put it in a car and ping it down the motorway at 70 miles an hour and wonder why we're all freaking out. You know, it's we are massively overstimulated, so you become used to that, and then it's hard, right? It's hard to just to go, do you know what, I'm just gonna sit. It's really hard.
Sit with it. Last night I watched Night Stalker with Jake Gyllenhaal. I love it. It's like a really great film. And I've realised that I've been watching so many films recently. I'm either drawing or I've got my phone, and I'm not even just in like engaging with the film, you know, this amazing film. And last night I left my phone in the kitchen, and it was because my brain was going mental and I couldn't sleep. So I came downstairs like in the middle of the night and started watching that. And I realised that I don't watch films. Don't watch them anymore. I just kind of like just consume them, and I don't like watching films, you know, like blockbuster films, because it is just about like this consumption. And I realised that last night I'm like, oh, I'm doing it all wrong again.
Yeah, it creeps in, doesn't it? It creeps in, and before you know it, it's not till sometimes you have a, like a bit of a bad spell that you think, oh crap, I've just been doing all that stuff. I worked so hard to stop, and it crept back in.
Yeah,
I know what you said. And yeah, we do consume everything like that. The world's like served up, I think, for us to consume like that, isn't it? You know, it's just like rammed in your face, and I know exactly what you mean, man.
I've been trying to slow down and make things. I've noticed that I just enjoy making, you know, like the process.
Yeah.
I realise that I really enjoy the process when I make stuff. So I make all these instruments and shit. But the process of making is like really zen. It's like a really lovely experience for me. And then if I finish and it works, I'm like, it's a buzz I don't seem to get from other things. It's because it's about process, I guess.
Yeah.
Ah, right.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It's actually enjoying the doing.
Yeah, yeah. It's that, I suppose, and another creative outlet like we were talking about at the start, you know, somewhere just to put that brain to work. If your brain's going to work so hard at doing all this mad stuff, put it to work on something, nice. Yeah.
Focus it.
That's nice, that one. That's really nice. Yeah.
It's funny because like my son's got autism, and quite often like he gets really into things, and like his recall on like a TV show is insane. And I'm always thinking, oh, right, if you could steer that into like, electronics or engineering or something, and then he'd be like the best in the world at it.
And then I
sit there doing that, and then I think, oh yeah, maybe I should focus a bit more, because my brain's just scattergun. It's just going, ah, what about that, what about that, what about that? And then when I do focus on something, I get to a point when I'm like, I can't work it out, you know, like just something ridiculous, and I'm like, I can't work it out. And then it's like, well, that's because you're shit, mate.
That old voice comes back again. Hello, my old friend.
So do you have loads of exercise then?
I do train a lot. Yeah, I do train a lot, and I go running, I go to gym and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just something I'm into. It's like a hobby, and it does help my mental health. It's not it's not like a huge thing, you know, like if I've gone all day, I haven't got exercise on holiday, I'm not obsessed with it or anything. It helps keep me ticking over. It's just a little part of my own personal puzzle, but I do enjoy the gym. I do enjoy a run. I do enjoy, you know, that sort of world. Yeah. That's kind of, yeah, that's kind of my space. Wasn't always the case. Like back when I was, like I said, I've mentioned before, like teetotal. So coming up on, when is it? In middle of July, it'll be 5 years for me since I've had a drink.
Really?
And yeah.
So what brought you to do that?
A drink was, for me, it was a massive crutch. So all those kind of like anxious feelings and stuff that I mentioned before, my way of being able to be myself in social situations, my way of being brave was to get pissed. And my wife and I, we worked for a holiday company. We worked abroad. And I did that for 10 years between like 20 and 30. I like traveled around Europe and worked for this company. And because it was like, you know, summer and loads of young people and everyone's drunk all the time.
Well, were you like a rep?
That kind of thing.
Oh,
yeah.
You were?
Yeah. It wasn't like, it wasn't like 18 to 30s. It wasn't that type of rep, but it was in a holiday environment. Yeah. And we looked after people in holiday resorts. So there's all sorts of boozing going on. So if you've got a bit of a booze problem, the best place to be is in those sorts of places because no one knows, right? So when you're like drinking because you're anxious or drinking because you're scared or drinking because you're unhappy and you want to cheer yourself up. So you have a can at a funny time of the day and, you know, get drunk every night. Well, that's what everyone else is doing because they're all on, you know, in that party atmosphere. So I did that for a long, long time and I had no idea drink was a crutch. It was just something I did every day. And then when I came back to the UK,
everyone, get sick? Did it make you ill?
No, not at all. Like I was always really good at it. Really fucking good. Even for, you know, when like you're 14 and you're like pinching it off your parents and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Even then I could handle my ale. I was a natural born drinker. Yeah. I could just go for days. No problem.
See, I would drink loads. I would drink loads. And then, I drank like every day for 10 years and, but I used to get really ill as well.
Right.
So like all day, right through, like I drink until 4 o'clock in the morning, go to sleep, not be able to get up. And then I'd feel really like I'd be throwing up. Like I drank much, I'd be like shitting diarrhea all the time. And in the days, like until like I started drinking again, basically come the evening, I'd be really ill.
Mate.
You're lucky.
Yeah. 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 And you know, like, I don't know, it got to the point when I went from being a really cool drunk, you know, that was always fun and always up for the next thing and always up for the, that started to turn, you know, and then every time I got drunk, I'd go too far. Every time I got drunk, I'd say something and wake up in the morning and I'd caused another fight with like my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. And, it just got to a point I was so sick of, like making an ass of myself, being horrible, and
that gives you anxiety as well.
That horrible feeling where you woke up in the morning and you think, I don't know what I've done wrong, but I've done something awful. It's in the air. I can feel it in the air and I can't even remember what it is.
Yeah.
And I just thought, do you know what? This has got to go. This doesn't serve me. It took me like 2 years to give up of like falling on the wagon, off the wagon. I'd do like 4 months. And then I think, I've had 4 months now. I feel really, really good. I'll probably just have a couple of cans on Friday. And I would. And then only had a couple of cans. Oh, like I've cracked this. And then the next Saturday, I'd go get hammered and make an ass of myself. Like, oh, I've got to give up now.
So how did that work with, like social settings and things? Because if you see friends, invariably it's drinking, you know.
Yeah, I suppose my situation is a little bit weird because, like I said before, I'm from Wales and I moved here. So I don't know. I do now. I've been here 10 years. But when I first moved up, I didn't really know many people, you know. So I had quite a small social circle and stuff like that. So it was mostly, so it wasn't too much of a problem, really. People are always funny when you give up drinking. Everyone is. Everyone's like, oh, don't be boring and all that sort of stuff. I used to walk around pubs with a... empty bottle in my hand. On the way in, I'd pick up an empty drink and I'd just carry it around all night. And then people leave you alone because they think you're pissed. You're all too involved in your own night. No one notices. Yeah, I'd just carry an empty Bud bottle around all night so people would leave me alone. Yeah, that was my tactic. There's a top tip for you if you want to give up drinks.
That's a top tip.
Yeah, yeah. Once everyone's pissed, no one notices.
There's been a few people who have said not drinking is a really good thing for your mental health. Like if you're a struggler, not drinking is a good thing. And a few kind of someone a fairly high profile went, just don't drink. Seriously, it would properly change everything. And I can't, yeah, I'm still, I don't drink every day, but like I normally drink around the weekend. And it definitely impacts on me. But the idea of not drinking, like, I don't drink to excess anymore. But like if I go out, then I can get a bit overexcited.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can quite easily get into the position where I'm saying and doing shit that's really fucking not really reasonable.
Yeah, that's the beauty of
Not terrible, but you know, like I'll get like I'm fucking trying to be funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's funny. Like for me, when I quit, that was a massive factor in like my first breakdown because my whole identity was formed around drink. All of it. Yeah. It was something I did, you know, and it was. I'd really lost sight over the years of who I was, yeah. of what I was, and everything that defined me was external and didn't really exist. So like booze was this thing. And then when I stopped drinking, I didn't know I used booze as a crutch because I was anxious and I was awkward and I was like, I didn't have the confidence in myself to make friends without booze. So then when I took booze away, then suddenly I was just fucking petrified, you know, like of all these situations. I'm saying, oh, you know, do you want to like come around for a, you know, come around for a pizza, watch a movie, or it's so-and-so's birthday. Do you want to come out? And I'd be like, I can't do it. I don't know what I'm going to say to people. I don't know how to act. I don't know where to put my hands, you know, or I'd go and like, I'd hold a piss all night because I was too anxious to go to the toilet because I didn't know where it was and I couldn't ask anyone. And, you know, all these, and I realized how I'd use drink to unlock me forever. And without it, I didn't know who I was. And that was kind of like, for me, that was once that fell away and then other stuff started falling away, that all contributed really to the first time when I was really poorly.
Fucking hell. That's pretty fucking heavy, isn't it?
Yeah, Joe, I've never really thought about it. Yeah, I'm just so used to telling that story. But yeah I suppose it was heavy. I suppose it was fucking heavy, man. Yeah, yeah.
It's like you've got to... I remember like going in, being assessed for psychotherapy and they said like everything you're doing now is wrong. You know, all of your ways of coping now are wrong and you're... Like if you're gonna get better, then all of it has to change.
Wow.
And I was like, fuck, that's fucking scary.
To change everything at once, man. That's like, yeah. Oh mate.
I know they said like let's talk about your support networks, you know, who's around you, how are you gonna keep safe and all this and all that.
Yeah.
And look, I don't know, maybe I could, yeah, that was heavy. And then you talk about taking away like that kind of safety blanket of booze.
Mm.
That's amazing.
I don't.
God, that's pretty amazing.
Thank you, mate. Thank you very much. I don't think I would have done it if I knew what I was doing, and I didn't even, you know, I'd kind of talk this out in a million counselling sessions before it kind of like. Oh yeah, hang on a minute. Yeah, I just completely threw away my coping mechanism without, because I didn't know I needed to cope, right? I didn't know that I had these problems.
So it kind of takes me back to what you said at the beginning about like when your kid was born. And suddenly it's like, oh fuck, this is scary.
Yeah.
Shit, this is really scary. My life's never going to be the same again. And I think so many people have an experience there where they're like, oh, this is right. Suddenly my life makes sense. The world, everything makes sense. I'm okay now. And I certainly didn't have that experience when I had kids. And yeah, I think I went through massive anxiety. It was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Shit, I can't even do like the really little things that I wanted to do. You know, like, who the fuck am I? And, oh, I've got to rein everything in.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, if you have a tendency, for me, I've like obviously got a tendency, like we said before, look for the worst in myself, always looking for a way to like fucking criticize myself and pick on myself and stuff like that. Well, when you're like a new parent and you ain't got a clue what to do, but the thing you're responsible for is another life, that's another level of being honest to yourself. You know, calling yourself a shit dad is one of the worst things you can say to yourself, you know. And you know, I was saying that to myself before I'd even had a chance to try being a dad, you know. It's you know, and all the sleep, you know, like that sleep goes out. And sleep for me now, if I start to feel any sort of wobble, offer. I'm lucky because I'm self-employed. I can have a nap most days, and I do, because it's really, that's important for me. Sleep is a trigger. And yeah, all of that got took away.
I'm exactly the same. Funnily enough, I think before I had kids, I used to be quite, from I don't know, maybe like 10 to, what, when I had kids, 30, I was proper insomniac. I could not sleep. And trying to get sleep became a massive trigger. I'll get anxiety because I can't sleep. That's that learning what anxiety is. And then I had kids, and because it completely threw everything out the window and exhausted me, like mentally more so possibly than physically, and the stress of it all, and like we had a really bad, difficult birth, and it was very, very like difficult. And all of that completely cured my my abilities, like my insomnia.
Mate, I'm here for that. Yeah, and I just completely.
And because it's like, oh, right, all I've got to do is focus my energy on just one thing, this kid, and then they'll go to sleep, and then I'll go to sleep. And then that simplicity was quite good for me, but it was only a short period that I had that simplicity. But I don't know, I really liked it when you said that, that was something that really kind of, like, really made you feel depressed, because I think as much as, like, people struggle with that, and people don't like to hear that, do they? Because I find when you talk about having children, people instantly kind of put on this rosy thing. Yeah. And then if a man, God forbid, said, actually, I found it difficult, and it's like, well, you're a man, you're an animal. And and then the fact that you said that so openly, I thought was really lovely, because I tend to be quite open about that. Actually, it's really hard. And and we all got fucking, like, we all had our ups and downs through that period, you know. People don't say that. Men don't say it much. Men just normally go, oh, I fucking love my kid.
Yeah, yeah, it's so true. And everyone does that whole thing of, you know, like, oh, and the baby was born, and I looked into the baby's eyes, and I just felt my whole world become complete. That weren't me. My first thought was like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can do this. You know, like, I didn't have that stereotypical Hollywood movie moment where I was complete. I shat myself big time. And I think as well, like, being a bloke, it's such a strange space around the birth of a child, right? Because there is half of you is expected to be really, like, almost hands off, you know, so you only get your 2 weeks paternity leave if you're lucky. And it's all much more, you're expected to be like, you know, your wife's up feeding the baby and you're wetting the baby's head, you know, come on, lads, let's get the cigars and share the cigars around. But at the same time, you're also supposed to be this, like, be the support network for your wife. And you're supposed to be doing all the stuff instead of bonding with the baby. You're the one that goes out at 4 a.m. to get the wipes, and that you, when you've run out of nappies and all that sort of stuff. And it's such a weird space. And I was like, I didn't know how to be myself, how to put myself. I didn't know which version of me, because I didn't understand myself, which version of me to be. And all the time, it's like, I really want to bond with this kid, and I don't know how, and I'm worried about my wife, and I think I'm going insane at the same time. And that period for me was when the sort of weird, like, uncontrollable crying for no reason, that's for me when it was like, you know, that's when that stuff started.
God, I know that uncontrollably crying for no real reason. And that's not, men aren't meant to do that.
Exactly that. Yeah, I was like,
and oh, you just feel like such an arsehole, and you're like, what's going on? I you know what, when I'm really ill, that's what I do. I know when I'm really in front. I find medication dries up those tears, which sometimes I miss. But, so at that point, the thing is, you're there, and then you're like, oh, I'm letting down my wife.
When your wife's been through hell in the delivery room, how are you supposed to say, I feel a bit sad and anxious? You know, she's just delivered a person, you know, like, it's just, it's really hard to find that space to sort of say, yeah, it's hard enough to talk and say you're struggling at any point.
Yeah.
Around about then, for me, it felt to put my hand up and say something's not right with me. It was like, well, I have to be, or I've got to be a role model. I have a son. I have to be a man, that, you know? And yeah, it's just like, just fucking nonsense, isn't it, really?
Oh God, that really takes me back. I remember those days so well. Difficult days. When we had my first daughter, it all went quite badly, and like my wife was like, she had to recuperate. I just basically did baby stuff. I just kind of stayed up, fed her, just fucking did everything for a while. And my work, where I had got so much leave and I'd saved it all, I was doing like 1 week on, 1 week off for like quite a while. And it's really weird, in that period, I didn't get miserable. I really didn't. It's because it was like, all right, my world just went, just do that. And I think that is kind of like part of the problem. It's really hard to go, just do that.
Mm.
You know, it makes you present. And I remember, like, when my wife had cancer a few years ago, and at that point, I went, just do that. And I coped with it amazingly well for a while. And that's what we struggled with. It's like, no, you can't just be doing that. You need to be doing that, that, and that. And you also need to be having exercise. You need to be meditating. Yeah. And all of these things. And it's like fucking overwhelming. It's so much.
Yeah. But
essentially,
really,
what you really need to be doing is just try and not, like, just try and bring your thinking in.
Yeah. And just be kinder to yourself, man. You know, and think, well, I can't do all the things all the time. You know, allow myself to have a bit of a wobble and then crack on. And, you know, yeah, it's all that balance. It's like spinning plates, isn't it? You know, and then one down the end starts wobbling off. So you have to run down there and spin it. And then the first one's fucking dropped off and you got to go pick that up. And, you know, there's never any point where you stand back and go, ta-da, look at all my plates. It's just like that constant thing. But sometimes it is easier to spin them than others, right?
And sometimes you do spin all the plates, which takes us back to the beginning, where it's like sometimes you are spinning all the place and you are doing quite well and you're also feeling quite good. So pat yourself on the back and go, you're doing all right at the moment.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Fucking hell, I feel like a comedian. You know how comedians, they'll do an hour, a little start at the beginning, and then they'll try and bring it all the way back. Ross Noble does it. He does that a lot. Well, we've come up to an hour. I would like to put you on the spot, and I want two top tips.
Two top tips.
Or one. Okay. Depending.
for looking after yourself?
Yeah. What are your top tips on being well? And like, what are the biggest things you've learned? Well, we have talked about a lot of them, but we'll just try and condense it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose one of the most powerful things that someone ever told me, it was one of those, you know, sometimes you have a moment in therapy where you just kind of go, whoa, you know, where you really kind of get an insight into something. And I was talking to my counselor, shout out Sean, about like how I talk to myself and how I berate myself and that bullying, that horrible voice, you know?
Yeah.
And we were just chatting about that. And he said to me, like, how would you, these things you say to yourself, how would you feel if someone else said them to you? And I was like, I'd feel really sad. I'd feel really angry. And he said, well, then why are you saying them to yourself? And I just had this like moment, and it seems really obvious now, you know, it seems really, really obvious. But in that moment, I'd never looked at it from that perspective. And I think a lot of people say stuff like, you know, don't talk to yourself in a way that you wouldn't talk to your best mate and stuff like that. But for me, that was powerful. I was like, hang on a minute. Like, why am I saying these nasty things? Yeah. This is mean. This is downright mean. And you're not a mean person. So don't be mean to yourself.
And I can control that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What? Yeah. It's not just how I am. I'm not actually shit, you know? And so that for me was, that was huge in that moment. That was the first time where I felt like I took a step towards changing my behavior and changing, you know, how I spoke and how I talked to myself. So that was a big one. And, you know, just be kind to yourself, man. You know, that's huge. Kindness, you know, like, don't put all the pressure to do all the things, because that's not necessary. Everyone's mental health journey is a puzzle, and that puzzle is individual to everyone. And you've got to find your own pieces. And that process of finding those pieces is not easy, and it's not nice, and it's not pleasant, and it's scary as fuck. And it's not necessarily quick, but if you can find some of the right pieces and slot them together and make your own puzzle, then yeah, it'll be all right, man. There's fucking hope. You can be okay. You can have a nice life. That's it, man. That's what people need to believe, right? You can be fine. It's not game over, man. Keep swinging. You can have a nice life. You can be better than you thought, you know? You really can. People can. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. I love that. Love Thank all you, of man. That. And I totally agree. Right, that's it, mate. I want to Job finish done. There. Because that was really good.
Thank you,
Tom, you superstar.
Oh, my pleasure, mate. Thank you for having me.
This is the mouth. This is
the mouth. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.